I would like to bring the Human Services Committee to order. I think we need to start with taking the roll.
Yes, good morning. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Lead Albright.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen present.
Thank you. Representative Keel. Representative Liebling.
Liebling present.
Good morning. Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Moore. Representative Novotny.
Novotny present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. I believe a quorum is present, so we can move on to the next order on the agenda, which is to approve the meeting minutes for 2/17/2022. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. We will go ahead and move the minutes for 2/22. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, then we will go ahead and dive right in. We are gonna hear three bills today that are health related in nature. Our plan today is to go ahead and move them out of the committee into the Health Finance Committee. However, since they are here, we're hoping to have a brief discussion on these and then go ahead and move them on to Health Finance as that is the committee of their jurisdiction. So first up today, members, we do have House File 2461, and I would like to move House File 2461 in front of the Health Finance Committee. That is Representative Bierman's bill. Representative Bierman, would you like to I failed in my duty. We did in fact approve the minutes. That motion prevailed and those notes are adopted. My apologies on that. And next we'll go ahead and move on to Representative Bierman's bill. Representative Bierman, would you like to address the committee and introduce your bill?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. Thank you. Members, as we move ahead, working to improve access, quality, and affordability of health for Minnesotans, and to improve the healthcare system, we need to be innovative. We are moving into an unprecedented time in the world of healthcare and biopharmaceuticals, pivoting from treating the symptoms of rare genetic and life-threatening conditions to actually addressing the underlying cause of disease through gene and cell therapies. This transition is happening because of the incredible innovation taking place at hospitals, research institutions, biopharmaceutical companies throughout the world, like Mayo Clinic here in Minnesota. It is an exciting time in the world of medicine, but we must be able to match the innovation happening in research and development with innovation in the world of financing and reimbursement. Our current models for reimbursement are out of date and do not adequately address the challenging paradigm. House File 2461 would allow DHS to establish a more sustainable approach to financing and reimbursement for these incredible gene and cell therapies through value-based arrangements. These alternative financing approaches be it outcomes-based payments over time or something else entirely, will allow DHS to realize the incredible potential for cost offsets over time, but also, and more importantly, create a positive coverage landscape for patients who could benefit most from these innovative therapies. These value-based arrangements will hold manufacturers accountable, tying reimbursement of the therapy to clinical and patient outcomes. Most importantly to me, Madam Chair and members, is that DHS will have the opportunity to design and develop flexible programs and options that reflect the needs of our population. So today, Madam Chair and members, we're seeking to have this bill move to health finance. There is still some language being worked on with DHS, but there is great interest in the potential of these creative payment options, and I ask the committee to further this discussion, please. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. And just to be clear for the record, I am, in fact, moving this bill, HF 2461, to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. That is, in fact, before the body at the moment. Representative Bierman, do we have any testifiers or do we have any questions?
Madam Chair, I was instructed just to come and present the bill and talk about it, but not to bring testifiers today due to schedule.
Thank you. Representative Albright, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Bierman, I'm familiar with gene therapies from my work with the groups that you also cited in the past. Does MA cover gene therapies today? And if they do, what are the costs to the state? And a follow-up on that is, does DHS anticipate that there will be savings through VBPs?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. Thank you for the good questions. So this whole premise of using value-based purchasing would hinge upon savings. They would first need to have a reason to do this. And so that's the real main point of this, is to save the state resources. In potential manufacturer driven bill or something that we here in Minnesota want to achieve, we can craft and design a bill for our liking. On your first question on what is covered by medical assistance at this time for gene therapies, I would have to ask the department for clarification on that. Certainly willing to do so if there's nobody in-house here today that can address that. But I think that's a very good question and one that we would need to know as we enter into any contracts, obviously, what they cover and what they don't.
Madam Chair.
Do we have anyone from the department that might be able to answer Representative Albright's question?
Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Chad Hope with the Department of Human Services. Introduction, I'm Deputy Director for the Division of Purchasing and Service Delivery. Madam Chair, Representative Albright, yes, we do currently cover gene therapies. There's a caveat that so long as they're part of the federal Medicaid drug rebate program, I'm not aware of any that are well known or publicized that are not part of that rebate program. So I think it's fair to say, yes, we do cover those. Unfortunately, we cannot disclose the cost because that's prohibited under the federal law, that the Department of Human Services cannot talk about the costs.
I hope Representative Albright, did you have any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Hope, to that very point, how will we know whether or not we are generating savings if we don't know the costs based upon the contractual confidentiality? So I think you've got an issue that, from a legislative perspective, we have to overcome. And then I have a follow-up for Representative Bierman, Madam Chair.
I want to remind us that we do want to move quickly on these bills, but certainly we want to make sure that we do get our questions answered.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, one of the pieces of technical assistance that we're currently working on with this bill is exactly to that point. While the language is permissive and does not mandate that DHS enter into any value-based purchasing agreement, we have suggested that language be added to ensure that any value-based purchasing agreement at least captures the current drug rebate savings through the federal program so that there isn't a risk of entering into an agreement that does not result in at least the same cost, if not a savings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bierman, having sat on this committee for a number of years, it's been my recognition that in recent years, the majority party in the House has been calling for an end to managed care for the state's drug benefit. How would your bill, with the allowance of value-based purchasing, interact with managed care, complement, or as might say, conflict with that initiative that we've seen by the majority party in the last several years?
Thank you, Representative Albright. I want to remind the committee that that is not the bill before us, and I'm not sure how that directly relates to the bill before us. I'll give a brief amount of latitude here, Representative Albright, but want to try to keep our remarks and our questions confined to the bill at hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. A very good question and a very big question. I come to this bill just looking at from the point of view of trying to reduce the costs for pharmaceuticals in any way, shape, or form that I can help manage that, and would look for your support on doing that exact thing. I think that how this would help is that we have the opportunity to really create systems based on our population and what we see as, you know, high volume products here in Minnesota, and creating a more beneficial deal for us even than the drug best pricing that Mr. Hoke referred to. And I think part of that too is getting the legislature to be able to understand the drug pricing that we are actually paying. So whatever we can do as a body to further that, I look for allies in that. And I think that's part of the whole managed care operation. We can't change can't change an impact based on things that we don't know. And that's definitely a part of the whole managed care and our health system, is the legislature can't know what these costs are. So we need to get around that and then get a better handle on how to move forward on all sorts of programs. So it's not just managed care, it's just this whole conglomerate of our healthcare system that is sort of built on top of each other, program after program, based on individual needs and not looking at the holistic approach. So great question. Would love to dive into that deeper with you or any member who wants to help us resolve the high cost of pharmaceutical pricing for us here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Clearly, this is a topic that will continue to have further discussion, but for today's purposes, we do want to get this bill moved onto its committee of jurisdiction. And with that, I would.
You're muted.
No. Still muted, Rep. There you go.
Sorry about that. I hit the button by accident. Representative Robbins, did you have something to this bill before we move on?
Oh, sorry, Madam Chair. Just briefly.
Go ahead, Representative Robbins.
Thank you. So, Representative Bierman, I appreciate you bringing this bill, and I'm voting no today, but I do want to keep working with you on this. I think there's too many unanswered questions right here, but I agree this is a really important topic, and I would be happy to keep working with you on it.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And with that, seeing no more hands, I would like to renew my motion to go ahead and move HF 2461 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll, please?
Absolutely. Chair Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bolden?
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
No.
Keel, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Novotny, no. Representative Pearson?
Pearson votes no.
Pearson, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Robbins?
No.
Thank you. Robbins, no. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. And Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Vice Chair Bonner, that's 11 ayes and 8 noes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. The motion prevails and HF 2461 is on its way to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Next up, members, we have HF 2676. Representative Fisher, would you like to make a motion to refer HF 2676 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee and explain your bill?
Thank you, Chair Bonner. Yes, I would like to move House File 2676 be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. This bill came to me as an idea while working with several nurses up my district who have been talking about how can we reform the healthcare system to be more accountable and to deliver services quickly and efficiently and at savings. And so the bill that we have before us is one of the innovative ways that they're proposing out there is having a mobile clinic where it would be a nurse-led healthcare model that would be out to address the needs of underserved communities in rural and urban Minnesota. The model is based on a wellness and disease prevention idea that can help address the needs out there, reduce costs in the system overall, and bring healthcare to communities right now that are not receiving the healthcare at the levels that they need. I do have a testifier with us today who can explain a little bit more about it, and if we could, if we could give her just 2 minutes or so, she can give a little bit more information on it.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Fisher. Just to be clear, we do have HF 2676 before us, and we will go ahead and move to the testifier. Do we have a Ms. Bartholomew here?
Yes, I'm right here. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Bartholomew, please introduce yourself, your name for the record, and your organization, and proceed with you.
My name is Kathleen Bartholomew. I'm a registered nurse with Nurses Transforming Healthcare. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for this opportunity and for your historically innovative leadership. Nurses Transforming Healthcare is an advocacy group whose goal is to change the trajectory of illness and disease in America to wellness and prevention by creating structures that reward outcomes and quality instead of volume and quantity. As you are aware, the health of Minnesotans is trending downward. Rural areas especially are struggling, and our citizens are feeling abandoned after not-for-profit hospitals have pulled out, leaving them without access, which is a key determinant of the social determinants of care. We are proposing a solution to stop this trend based on 20 years of research demonstrating that collaborative care clinics are effective at improving outcomes. Evidence and support for this model can also be validated by HRSA, which has offered a $34 million grant for nurse practitioner-led clinics that actually closes today. Mobile nurse practitioner-run clinics will also proactively address the shortage of 75,000 primary care physicians by 2025. Working closely with Minnesota universities and public health, our integrative mobile unit will provide primary care, nutrition, and behavioral counseling. Nurses have been trained in this holistic approach. Our goal is to decrease hospitalizations and urgent care visits and send a clear message to Minnesotans that they matter. The result is that they will know that you care.
I strongly believe that this will be a pioneering model for other states to follow, and I thank you again for your leadership.
Thank you, Ms. Bartholomew. And it appears we do have a question. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would direct this to either Ms. Bartholomew or Representative Fisher, but I'm wondering, I come from rural areas. Access is a challenge. However, how would this work in concert with public health that is very active in this same direction? And, while we lack physicians, I just have some real concerns about how we would actually manage that on a mobile unit when we already have public health nurses actually entering and going into houses, families where they need direct care, sometimes directed by the county, or most of the time directed by the county, but also the school district. So how would that compare?
Bartholomew?
I look at this as closing the gap and augmenting, not substituting, what public health is always doing right now. So there has been a historical gap between public health and nursing, and this model unites them both to work closely together to serve the needs of the community. I imagine that the Department of Health will help us to identify the areas that they want us to go to that are being underserved, and that we can offer primary care because nurse practitioners have the full scope of practice authority in Minnesota.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just really have had some personal exposure to some of this alternative care. While I would support some of it, I have some real concerns about how we're going to do this. And I would encourage people to still work within the physician realm, even though I believe and have worked with many very qualified RNs, nurses, that have great direction in our healthcare, but we're already having challenges with finding nurses. I think this would just really create a problem in our area entirely. And especially my public health nursing services, they're very good. A lot of RNs work there and are on call all the time.
Would you like to follow up? Ms. Bartholomew, you had a comment.
We also anticipate that our clinic can be supported with nurses who are students so that we can add to the body of the workforce right there. There are many, many issues that the nurses can address, and I see this as a sieve where they can send the patients who actually need to be seen by physicians and for direct physician care to the physicians so that we're putting the right people in the right place. And we're going to work very closely with the university, which is also has been a historic disconnect. Working closely with the university to use social determinant of health tools to augment the care and to find those places where people aren't receiving care at all or haven't seen a nurse for weeks or a doctor for months. In fact, we have experience on our team with going into farming communities and going to farm services and providing just basic health checks, and the farmers have been very grateful, told us they didn't have the time. So
I'm laughing. I gotta explain it. I'm laughing. I'm a farmer. I live with farmers. They'd have a heart attack before they go into the doctor. And they know darn well they're supposed to do that. But a nurse coming on my farm or telling my father, he drove himself to the hospital when he was having a heart attack. Which he shouldn't have done, but regardless, he survived it all. So, but a nurse coming out is not going to change. I'd be real surprised if that would be very successful in my neck of the woods. So anyway, side point.
Thank you, Representative Keel. All right, next we have Representative Albright. You have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bartholomew, I've taken a look at a little bit at your organization structure, and what I find interesting, I'd like for your comment, is that you're asking for the government to declare healthcare a public utility, and then go so far as to expand the role of nurses. It seems to me like what you're also suggesting, if I read your literature correctly, is that you're suggesting that healthcare be run by state-based regional councils as a function of a primary provider. Could you explain that? Because it just seems like what you're doing is adding a layer of bureaucracy that really would tend towards a government-provided healthcare system.
Great question. Thank you very much. So healthcare right now, to me, to use a metaphor, is like a 10,000 car train that's headed in the wrong direction. It is on a track to illness and disease. 46% of our population, as you know, suffers from chronic disease, and now every state obesity rate are over 20%. We're heading the wrong way. Our goal is you can't just reverse the train. You just can't stop it. It's too large. It's too entrenched, too bureaucratic, too hierarchical. So how do we change the direction of the train to wellness and prevention? The way we do that is to create switch tracks. And the first switch track is to offer primary care to, as a recent advisory board just suggested, to make sure every American has a primary care doctor or nurse practitioner. And that is our goal. And those nurses are in the perfect place and have been trained to look at the social determinants of healthcare. That is one idea. It is not what we're advocating for here. What we're advocating here is to switch the track so that we can focus on prevention and wellness, prevent people from going to the hospitals, stop unnecessary drives to urgent care, listen to the people in their communities, not go in and tell them what they need, but do an assessment as nurses are trained to do and say, what do you need? What is the primary driver of illness in your community? And by most of all, creating a relationship. Imagine how different the pandemic would have played out if every citizen had a relationship with a trusted provider.
All right. Thank you for that, Ms. Bartholomew. I know this is a certainly an interesting debate. And as we continue to look for innovative solutions, this discussion will continue. But for today, we do want to get this bill over to the Health Policy and Finance Committee. If there are no other questions, I would like to go ahead and renew my motion to move a House, or to renew Representative Fisher's motion to refer HF 2676 to the Health Finance Committee. Ms. Hansen, would you be able to take the roll, please?
Of course. Chair Schultz.
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright.
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle.
No.
Burkle, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel.
No.
Keel, no. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Novotny, no. Representative Pearson.
Pearson, no.
Pearson, no. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Robbins.
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Sandel?
Aye.
Aye. Sandel, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. It's 11 ayes and 8 nays. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. That being said, the motion prevails, and HF 2676 is on its way to Health, Finance, and Policy, where I'm sure that we will continue this debate. Members, next we have HF 3368. I will move that HF 3368 is referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And we have with us Representative Moran. Would you care to explain your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to say good morning to everyone, to Madam Chair and members. And thank you for the opportunity to introduce House File 3368 to the body here today. So before I introduce the bill, I just want to make a statement that in the last 4 months of the pandemic, half of all Black workers in Minnesota were laid off and applied for unemployment. Compared to white workers, it was 25%. Women of color were hit especially hard by temporary and permanent layoffs during the pandemic. Before the Black population, men and women lost jobs at the same rate. Towards the end of 2021, the unemployment rate for Black workers in Minnesota remained high at 10%. For white workers, the rate was at 5.6%. And so what we have seen here is violence that has showed up in some of the most unhealthy ways. You know, trauma is not the things that happens, but it is the effect left within us by our experiences. So to combat the trauma, validate the trauma that we are seeing, we would like to stop the shooting and the violence that we have seen in St. Paul and Minneapolis and focus on wellness. I bring this bill to the committee as part of a solution to peace in the Twin Cities that comes from communities impacted, community who wants to take the lead and are taking the lead, and not government telling us what is needed and what works. So House File 3368, called Guns Down, Love Up, is a program that addresses youth and community violence, focused on prevention, intervention, and restorative practices within the African-American community. Gun Downs and Love Up focus on decreasing gun violence by increasing positive community interactions, conversations, spaces, events, and creating programs that heal and prevent future retaliation. Gun Down Love Up works with families, communities, stakeholders, and religious organizations in local communities in St. Paul and Minneapolis to promote the message of ending gun violence and promoting love. The appropriation request is $800,000 over the span of 5 years. House File 3368 needs to be referred to the Health Finance as the grant funding will be amended in that committee hearing to move from DHS to MDH, where I hear that they are already allocating grants into municipalities across Minnesota. Madam Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Moran. I know that we are constantly looking for ways to really address the needs of our communities, and so I really appreciate you bringing this bill forward. Do we have any questions to the bill? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Moran, good to see you this morning. I'm not familiar with this organization, and so I'm hoping that you might provide the committee this morning with some information about its current structure and particularly how the organization is realizing its resources and funding since they have been around, I don't know for how many years, but if you could just give us a little breakdown in terms of their funding sources and the organizational structure that they currently possess.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Good to see you too. I can see your picture, but good to be here. So I was told that it would be a brief introduction because this bill needed to be referred to another committee, but I will try to do my best to respond to your questions. This is an organization that has been around since 2018. And the organizational goals of this organization is to decrease gun violence in Minnesota with a focus on the Twin Cities, to increase public awareness through a media message campaign, to engage in conflict resolution activities with the community at large, and to educate community members on the lasting traumatic impact that gun violence has on our community and Minnesota quality of life. They have broken down their budget area. A little bit more about the programs and community service. Their efforts are to, again, focus on decreasing the gun violence by increasing positive. So that's pretty much the same. So they broke down the budget to, it's a 5-year plan with Their goal is to have an annual gun balance, a youth gun balance conference. They are doing in-school peer education because what happens in our community folds all over into our schools. What happens in our schools folds over into the community. They have a community healing center, which includes activities and events, community engagement and outreach. It's all part of that 5 years plan along with the medium campaign. And the budget has been broken down in this fashion. Administration, operations, and general funds is $428,000. The media campaign will be $40,000. The annual youth gun violence conference, if it's done well, and hopefully it will be, like everything else needs to be done, is $50,000. In-school peer education and programming and partnership with schools in the Twin Cities is $100,000. And this is all over 5 years. And community healing centers and activities is $92,000 with community engagement and outreach at $90,000. That's what I have, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Representative Moran, for that very comprehensive overview. I know this is an informational interview, so you've done a fabulous job of helping get us up to speed there. Representative Albright, does that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. With that, I'm going to move on to Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this organization come down on Second Amendment rights, Chair Moran?
So this is nothing that has to do with any Second Amendment rights. There are many who are in the Black community who are permit holders. They believe in it. So this has, as far as I know, through my understanding with the executive director, this has nothing to do with the Second Amendment and the right to carry.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Moran.
Short follow-up.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Short follow-up question, Chair Moran. Maybe I missed it in the thing. What is the current budget that they are operating under, and how many students are they serving? Was that answered before?
No, I'm Madam Chair. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Okay. Yeah, and Representative, I don't have that information in front of me with the one pager that they gave me. But I can have them do a follow up once we get to the next committee. So you have two questions. You want to know their budget, the annual budget.
Yes.
And what was the other question, Madam Chair?
And the current amount of people are serving right now.
Okay. I can do a follow-up.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Moran. And I believe we have Representative Robbins that has an additional question as well. Representative Robbins, I think you're on mute.
So sorry, I was focused on taking my hand down and then I got confused. Nice to see you, Chair Moran. Thank you for bringing this bill. I am a big fan of programs that engage youth, especially in the hours between after school and when parents get home from work. And I do think this is important. But I do have a couple questions more related to the process of this, because you mentioned that this needs to go to the Health Committee because there's like some new grant program the Department of Health is already engaged in. So I just wondered if you could explain that a little more, and then what will this then become competitive? Are other groups able to compete for these dollars? Is there like a larger pot somewhere where people are applying, or is this appropriation gonna be ongoing, $800,000 for every year of the next 5 years specifically to this group? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Robbins. So originally, as introduced, the bill was sent, the bill has language in it that would allocate the funding to go to DHS for a grant process. And through conversation with DHS, DHS felt that the Department of Health would be a better entity because they are already doing a grant process. And so that's the amendment that will be coming, right? I hope you understand that. The original bill was directing dollars to DHS. DHS proposed to us that it should be going to MDH. So that will be an amendment that is coming forward. Let's see here. And the other question was, well, I'm sorry, Representative Robbins.
Yes. So originally in your testimony, I thought it sounded more like the 800,000 would be over 5 years. But in the bill language, it looks like it's $800,000 every year between 2022 through 2026. And that money not used can be carried over in each subsequent year.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Just if you could clarify, it's $800,000 a year.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, so the language in the bill is that $800,000 in fiscal year 2022 and $800,000 in fiscal year 2023 are appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Human Services for a grant to Guns Down, Love Up, a community organization that promotes safety using prevention, intervention, and restorative practices within the African-American community. The encumbrance balance in the first year does not cancel, but is available for the second year of the $800,000 is added to the base in the year, in the fiscal year 2024, 25, and 26 for this purpose. That's the language before us, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Moran. Yes, that last part I was confused about, when it's added to the base. So will they get $800,000 in all the out years as well?
Is there someone from, I don't know, researcher, someone who can respond to that question as the way it is written, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Representative Moran. Do we have someone from House Research available that might be able to answer the question?
Madam Chair? Elizabeth Kleckus with House Research. My understanding of this language is that $800,000 would be appropriated in 2024, 25, and 26, and then the appropriation would stop.
Thank you, Ms. Clarkfist. Ms. Robbins, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Clarkfist. I appreciate that. So really, this is an appropriation of $800,000 for each year for the next 5 years, not just over the next 2 years.
Yes.
Representative Moran.
That's my understanding, yes.
Thank you. I just appreciate the clarification because that language was a little odd to me. So thank you very much. No further questions.
Thank you, Representative. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and get this moved on. So I will renew my motion to refer House File 3368 to the Health Finance Committee. Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll, please?
Yes. Chair Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Lead Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bolden?
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
No.
Keel, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Moore, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Representative Pearson? I'll come back to you at the end, Representative Pearson. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Robbins?
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Sandel?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Pearson. Okay, Vice Chair Bonner, that's 11 ayes, 7 noes, and 1 excused.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. With that, the motion prevails and HF 3368 is on its way to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Next, we have House File 3159 from Representative Robbins before us. I'm going to bring that before us. I just want to remind members that we do have 15 minutes left in the hearing. We want to give you plenty of time for questions. With that, Representative Hollins, welcome to the committee. I see that you do have an author's amendment. Would you like us to move that and get it in the shape you would like it before our discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would. And I apologize for keeping my camera off. My internet is really unstable right now.
All right. I have that same issue today, Representative Hollins. All right. So I will go ahead and move to amend HF 3159 with the A1 amendment. And we'll do a simple voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. The motion prevails and the amendment has been adopted. Now I'd like to refer HF 3159 to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee as amended and recommend that Representative Robbins, if you could please explain your bill.
Hollins.
Hollins, right? Just making sure.
My apologies, Representative Hollins. Clearly my brain and my mouth are not working in tandem today. I apologize.
Not a problem. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I appreciate your willingness to hear this bill. I want to give a little bit of background. So Minnesota Statute 260C.513 governs permanency dispositions and child protection cases when a court has determined that a child cannot return home. Currently, the statute states an explicit preference for terminating the parent's legal rights in all permanency decisions before the court may consider other options.
Did we lose Representative Hollins? Representative Hollins? I do not see her. What we can do while we wait for Representative Hollins is go to the testifiers. Representative Albright, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair, that was my recommendation, or just hold and move on to the next bill in the essence of time.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the testifiers while we wait for Representative Hollins to restore her connection. We have with us today Ms. Burton from the Institute to Transfer Child Protection. Ms. Burton, are you available to go ahead and speak?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Burton. If you want to state your name and your affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Hannah Burton. I am a student at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law, where I've been working on this bill with the Institute to Transform Child Protection. Before law school, I was a social worker for about 8 years, working in various child welfare related roles as well. So I'd like to give a little background since Representative Hollins was cut off. The purpose of this bill is to ensure that Minnesota's permanency decisions in child protection matters are in line with best practices of keeping families together whenever possible. The problem is that under the current law, when a court has decided that a child cannot return home, the explicit preference for a termination of parental rights creates an unnecessary barrier for families and counties and courts to consider alternative options that may be a better fit for the child, including a permanent transfer of custody to a relative or kin. This policy is also having a disproportionate effect on communities of color. In Minnesota, Native children, Black children, and children of two or more races are more likely to have their parents' rights terminated, and they are less likely than white children to be adopted, leaving higher rates of children of color in foster care without a permanent home, some of whom will age out of care with no support system in place. It's important to highlight that a termination of parental rights is a permanent legal severing of the parent-child relationship, and it can also sever important relationships the child has with extended family members, their friends, and their community. What this bill is focused on doing is preserving and expanding the child's circle of support at this critical point in their lives, rather than defaulting to a permanency option that can have the effect of shrinking their support system or unnecessarily dissolving relationships that are significant to the child. I want to say that it may be in certain cases that a termination of parental rights is viewed by the court as the best option for the child, and this bill does not prevent the court from pursuing that. This bill does two important things. First, it would require that preference be given to permanency options with relatives before non-relatives. And second, it removes the presumption that a termination of parental rights be the preferred option for every child. And instead, it would make a transfer of custody and adoption equally valid options. And it requires that this decision be made on the best interests of the child. It's long been a best practice that when a child is removed from the home, placement with relatives and kin should always be considered first. Social science research shows that children who are placed with relatives have better outcomes, including behavioral and mental health outcomes, better educational stability, better cultural, racial, and traditional connections to their communities of origin. And importantly, youth have reported experiencing a greater sense of belonging with relatives and kin. So just in closing, this bill is a small but necessary step in the right direction. It will help remove unnecessary obstacles to valid permanency options for kids. It bases this decision on the best interests of the child, and it's consistent with best practices to preserve important relationships and connections to the child's family and community whenever possible. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Burton. And I do believe we have Representative Hollins that has restored her connection, if she would like to proceed.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'm so sorry about that. I'm on my phone now, which seemed to have a better connection. But honestly, we can just continue with the testifiers because they can say it better than I can. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Hollins. With that, we will move on to Ms. Chalmers. Chalmers. I hope Chalmers. I'm saying that correctly. Chalmers. All right. Thank you so much. Ms. Chalmers, if you're available, go ahead and state your name, your organization, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Chalmers. I bring much professional and personal experience to my testimony today. I'm the co-founder and until very recently, the executive director at Ampersand Families. My current role at the agency is providing permanency, innovation, and consultation in support of community initiatives that strengthen how the child welfare system supports family and child well-being in ways that are equitable and that keep children connected to relatives, kin, community, and culture. From 2003 to 2008, I designed and directed the Homecoming Project, a federally funded demonstration project where together with Minnesota Department of Human Services, we spent 5 years developing best practices to achieve permanency for older youth in Minnesota's child welfare system. I've worked in home-based services to prevent placement, therapeutic foster care, and residential programs. In my personal life over the last 22 years, I have fostered or hosted 6 then teens, now age 27 to 42. Lastly, and most long ago, I was a child in Colorado's foster care system and aged out without permanency in 1985. In my 32 years practicing child welfare in Minnesota, I have seen priorities and practices shift and evolve. House File 3159 is one of the most significant legislative actions that could happen right now. The reasons are pretty straightforward. First, This change makes explicit that in Minnesota, we believe that families matter and that children should be able to be loved, cared for, and supported by people like aunties, grandmothers, uncles, if their parents are unable to care for them. It says that in Minnesota, we will look to these people as our first and best options to care for children when their parents are unable to care for them. There are first and best options to care for a child who is facing the tragedy and disruption that separation from parents causes. Even when parents are struggling, separation is painful for all involved and without fail has a lifetime impact on a child. I can tell you without hesitation, without reservation, that the overwhelming majority of children and teens in our child welfare system desperately want to be connected to relatives and community and the cultural ties that those connections afford them. Interventions that protect children ought not and need not result in the loss of relationships that are their birthright. The second reason this bill is so significant is that it removes the presumption that proactively making a child a ward of the state should be the preferred first step when faced with the tragic situation of a child who's unable to return home. This presumption, which is contained in our current statute, is like using a chainsaw when a butter knife would suffice. We might get some butter on some part of the toast, but we really mess up the kitchen and the bread in the process. Eliminating the deeply flawed presumption that termination of parental rights is routinely necessary in order to help children find the stability of a safe, loving home will allow social workers to more effectively use more compassionate and more effective options to achieve permanency, including transfer of permanent physical legal custody to a relative. The changes proposed in House File 3159 affirm that here in Minnesota, we believe that family relationships matter and that we will see grandmothers and aunties and uncles who stepped forward to care for children as valuable, critical assets in our commitment to loving and caring for our most vulnerable children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chalmers, for your testimony. Certainly, I think we all acknowledge that we have a long way to go to make sure that we keep families whole and respect that it really does take a village to care for our kiddos. I know that's how it works in my family as well. All right, with that, do we have any questions for Representative Hollins or for the testifiers? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll be brief. To the testifiers, are there times when placement with relatives would not be in the best interest of the child, and how do you go about screening to ensure that the protection of the child takes precedent over family preservation?
Ms. Chalmers or Ms. Burton, would one of you like to address that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Albright. Certainly, there are situations where a relative may not be the best option for a child, and that's why it was so critical in this statute that we include the language best interests of the child. So by placing these options on equal footing, we're truly giving courts, counties, and social workers the opportunity to really consider the child's best interests. Relatives do have to go through the same process as non-relatives when it comes to licensing and home studies, just as a non-relative would have to do. So that is a great question. I'm glad that you brought it up.
Thank you, Ms. Burton. Ms. Chalmers, did you have anything you wish to add?
That was perfect.
All right, wonderful. Representative Albright, did you have any additional questions or follow-up?
Manager.
All right. Well, if there are no other questions, then I will renew my motion to refer HF 3159 to the Judiciary
Madam Chair,
Finance.
There is a question.
Yeah, oh, I apologize. Representative Novotny, I didn't see your hand there.
Thank you, Chair. I snuck it in at the end. Thank you for catching it, Representative Liebling. So I'm just curious, how far out in the relative chain is described as being family in this?
Ms. Burton or Ms. Chalmers?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Novotny. Under Statute 260C212, there is a definition of what relative means, and it's initially relation by blood, marriage, or adoption, but also a person with significant relationship can also be considered a relative, which sometimes in the social work field we call kin. So this could be someone who is an important friend, family friend, neighbor, teacher, someone that has established a pre-existing significant relationship with a child.
Thank you, Chair Brown.
Representative Novotny, did you have any follow-up?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Novotny. I thought it was odd that we didn't have any more questions. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins, and to the testifiers. You know, I don't know this area very well, so I'm asking what may be a dumb question, but it's sticking in my head, so I just have to ask it. When the transfer or permanent legal or physical custody to the relative occurs, are the parent rights then terminated? Could you explain to me how that affects parent rights? Thank you.
Ms. Burton or Ms. Chalmers?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. There are no stupid questions. This is a complicated area of the law, so thank you for that. So in a transfer of custody, no, there is not a permanent legal severing of the parent-child relationship with a transfer of permanent legal custody to a relative. That only happens with a termination of parental rights. However, under a transfer of custody, maybe this gets to the point of your question, the relative will have the primary rights and responsibilities for everything for the child's care, for their educational needs, their medical and health needs. So the parent does not have primary rights any longer under a transfer of custody. However, they would have, potentially some visitation if that was ordered by the court, or they may have access to some limited information such as illness, severe illness, or notification of a, serious accident. So there are some minimal rights that can be retained under a transfer of custody, but that permanent legal severance only happens under the termination of parental rights.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in follow-up to that, so if someone adopted these children, then there would be termination of parental rights? Or I'm just trying to understand this relationship with the termination of parental rights. So if transfer of custody, parental rights are intact. What if there's an adoption?
Ms. Burton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Robbins. Yes, with an adoption, there must be a termination of parental rights in order for an adoption to happen. I want to point out, though, that we are terminating rights to children's, parental rights to of parents. Not always do we have an adoptive family lined up. So sometimes adoption doesn't always follow, but you're right. A TPR, a termination of parental rights, is needed before an adoption can take place.
Ms. Burton, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last question. So if the parent rights aren't terminated and the transfer of permanent legal custody is granted to a relative, like, does the court work that out? That seems like that could be fraught with stress for all parties involved.
Ms. Burton.
Thank you, Representative. I'm not entirely sure maybe what you're asking, but it is something that the family, the county, and the court would sort through, but ultimately this decision is left to the court based on the child's best interest. So it's ultimately always going to be the court's decision.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Robbins. All right, with that, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, first of all, I want to thank Representative Hollins for bringing this. This is a incredibly important topic and really appreciate the testifiers, what I've heard so far. And I also always feel a little bit at sea with this topic because I feel like there's so much to understand here and we absolutely always want to get it right because there's so much at stake. So a couple of things. First of all, we haven't heard from the counties. I'm kind of curious to know what their reaction is. Let me just sort of give you the range of my questions. And I'm not expressing any disapproval of the bill whatsoever. I just want to understand a little bit more. In fact, it sounds like a really good bill. But so what the counties say about it, another piece would be whether this is how other states do it. If this is kind of a new idea or something that is already being done elsewhere. And then thirdly, I'm a little bit wondering about the way the money follows the child in this circumstance. You know, we have North Star Care for Children. You know, we have funding that goes with kids that go into foster care that goes with adoption. And, you know, if there's any impact on that, that we should be tracking. Thank you. I'll sign off and just listen to the answers.
All right, Ms. Burton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Liebling. Those were all really great questions. As far as the first one with the counties, we are in communication with the counties and have been discussing with the counties. We actually have another follow-up meeting today with them to discuss the most recent amendments that you heard. So we're not aware of any overt opposition. We just met with DHS as well, which is where the amendments that you just heard stemmed from. And we've been in a close working relationship with them. Connected to that, DHS provided technical assistance to ensure that we are considering the funding and that our bill is in federal compliance with the requirements there regarding North Star kinship assistance. So that currently exists right now. We have assistance for relatives and kin who receive a transfer of custody. So this bill does not have any negative or adverse effect on being able to redeem those federal dollars for families regarding kinship assistance. And we've been very careful and intentional to make sure that that doesn't happen. As far as other states and what other states do, it's a great question. Only three other states in our review of all the state statutes, only three other states are explicitly stating a preference for terminating parents' rights, including Minnesota. About 24 states provide a list of permanency options, but they don't indicate a permanency preference. So that's actually what we're suggesting with this bill, is to lay out all the options, make it neutral, but based on the best interests of the child. So we're following and consistent with many other states in going that path. There are a couple of states who are kind of taking it further, I would say, and stating that preference for a transfer of custody should be considered first before resorting to a termination of parental rights. That's Maryland and Arkansas. The last thing I'll point out is that about 10 or more states do explicitly state in their court policies and agency policies a very clear preference for permanent placement with relatives and kin. So even if they're not saying it in their state statute, many states are saying this is a value that we uphold, and they've put it in policies elsewhere.
Thank you, Ms. Burton. Representative Liebling, any follow-up to that? All right, no. Wonderful. Any other questions for the testifiers or for Representative Hollins just before we move on? All right, I do not see any hands. So with that, I want to thank Ms. Burton and Ms. Chalmers for being here today with us, as well as Representative Robbins. That said, I want to renew my motion to refer HF 3159 as amended to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Ms. Hansen, would you kindly take the roll?
Chair Schultz.
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller. Representative Noor.
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Novotny, no. Representative Pearson. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Robbins.
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Representative Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Albright, would you like the chance to place a vote?
No.
No. Okay, thank Albright, no. One second, Vice Chair Bonner. Ten ayes, seven noes, and two excused. Thank you. I had to do some math.
All right. Thank you. And with that, the motion prevails. HF 3159 as amended will be moved on to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Thank you, Representative Hollins. All right. Last on the agenda today, we do have one more bill, HF 2820. The motion today will be to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Omnibus Bill. Representative Backer, welcome to the committee. And would you like to explain your bill for us, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I do have a testifier, but HF 28 works with, is a facility in Orchardville, Minnesota, Monarch Heights, which is a intermediate care facility for adults. And right now, they receive the lowest reimbursement in the state. They are currently at $142.09 a day per individual. The average for Class B facilities is $286.26. What this bill does is it raises the per diem rate up to only $250, which is still below the average statewide standard. It's an important facility in that area. And I believe you received, members received some letters of support from families who have residents in that facility. They're doing a lot with little. The people who are working there have, as we're all familiar, us members who have served on various HHH committees, these people are working there because of the love for the residents, because they can go to the Dairy Queen not too far away in town and make more per hour. So with that said, I am going to turn it over to a testifier. Just also yesterday, there was a proposed amendment, some technical things that missed the deadlines from DHS, and I'll work with the chair on that in the future. So I just want to give that heads up for members. So with that said, I'd like to turn it over to our testifier, Ms. Stacy Carls, who is the Monarch Heights Program Director. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Backer. And we do have a Ms. Carols here to testify today. Ms. Carols?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right, Ms. Carols, if you'd like to state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. My name is Stacy Carls, and I am the Director of Monarch Heights in Ortonville, Minnesota, and Big Stone County. First of all, I want to thank everyone. I know your time is precious, so I really thank you for your time to listen today. Monarch Heights, Representative Backer introduced, we're an intermediate care facility for adults with disabilities, also known as an ICFDD. I would like to mention, however, that the term facility is not completely accurate. Monarch Heights is a place that 11 residents call home. In fact, it's a place that 5 residents have called home for over 39 years. Monarch Heights is built on a moral foundation and philosophy that aims to bring independence, security, and a voice to everyone that lives here. It's our goal to make each day better than the last for each resident, and to prove that a disability does not define oneself or their capabilities. As Representative Backer stated, there are 101 Class B ICFDD facilities in the state, and they all operate under the same funding structure, but they're at different rates. And the current rates are at the lowest $142.09 a day, and at the highest rate in the state, it's $478.06. Of these 101 facilities, Monarch Heights operates at the lowest per diem rate. And so to be clear, that's $142.09 per person per allowable billing day. This per diem that we receive is the funding source for all operational costs, including utilities, building repairs, recreational activities, supplies, insurance, licensing fees, in addition to staff wages. And if we take the last 6 years into consideration, Monarch Heights has operated at an annual loss of $82,841 a year. This operational deficit has forced us to rely on the generosity of families of our residents, our community members, fundraisers, grants, and short-term programs to keep Monarch Heights operating. Today, I'm asking you to support the House File 2820, which gives an increase to $250, which is specifically for Monarch Heights. Again, this is still well below the state average. This proposed rate increase, what it would mean for and allow Monarch Heights to do is kind of beyond words, but I'll try very quickly. Simply, the rate increase will allow us to thrive and not just survive. Our residents deserve the best. Increased funding would allow us to be able to complete necessary building maintenance, including just various repairs and updates that the residents are very deserving of. It would allow us to provide recreational activities and community involvement for the residents. A rate increase would certainly allow for us to be able to pay better and more fair wages, much as Representative Backer stated. You know, currently our employees make less than what fast food operations are offering at a starting wage, and that disconnect is just really upsetting. A rate increase also allows the opportunity for staff training, education, and this is fundamental to be able to provide that due to the increasing needs and supports of our clients. And really, I could go on and on as to what the rate increase would allow us to do, but the bottom line is that it'll allow us to continue to change the lives of those that we serve. And I do know that letters in support from the family were submitted, and I am hoping that you've had an opportunity to review those. And, you know, I just want to repeat maybe one thing that or a couple of things from the families that they have stated. So in summary, families describing what Monarch Heights means to them and what it has done for them. One family stated that Monarch Heights has turned a building into a home. We've created an environment where housemates are family. Monarch Heights operates as an extension to our family. Another stated, our gratitude and respect can scarcely be expressed in words. Their family members' daily needs are met. Social emotional life encompasses her, and her co-residents create a community within a community. She is nurtured and loved by staff and friends. This speaks volumes about the nurturing environment sustained by Monarch Heights. It is a part of her soul. And lastly, one states that Monarch Heights provides everything necessary to live a complete and happy life, and that takes talent and understanding, but also financial support. And, you know, at the sum of it, we will continue to put every effort forward that we can to create the best life possible. But with the current funding that we have, we may not be able to support these individuals much longer. And the result, it would just be devastating to everyone that we serve. So, again, I want to thank everyone for the opportunity to speak today. And I do welcome the opportunity to answer any questions that anyone has. But so thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Carrolls. It's clear that you're creating a really warm and welcoming environment for all of your residents. And I want to thank you. I know, especially in these times, it's very challenging to continue to do that in all that's happening in the world these days. So thank you for all of your hard work.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Backer or for Ms. Carrolls on the bill today? Any comments on the bill?
I just have one last comment, Madam Chair.
Well, then, Representative Backer, we're going to let you go ahead and give some closing remarks.
Yeah, members and Chair, Madam Chair, I would really ask for your support. They're doing a lot with a little. This total appropriation we talked about going up to $250 is roughly for a year about $350,000. These people are doing a whole lot with the less, and what they're asking for is below state average. So we do appreciate everybody's consideration, of course, Madam Chair, and thank you for your time and listening and considering this today. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Backer, for bringing this bill forward. With that, we would like to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance and Policy Omnibus.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I'm sorry, just before you do that, I just wanted to ask if I could, and this is, we have, we know that these ICFDDs are, you know, have been, we have big problems, and I appreciate the bill, but my understanding was that in the governor's budget proposal, there was something to benefit all of the ICFDDs across the board, and I just wonder if there's anybody here that could clarify that, because without that, you know, over the years we've been left with these kind of one-off funding requests, which while they're all very worthy, it gives us, it's sort of, you know, very hard for us as legislators to figure out what the funding should be for individual facilities, and haven't really had a good unified rate methodology, it seems. And so I just wonder if there's anybody here that could clarify that for us before we lay the bill over.
All right. My apologies, Representative Liebling, for not seeing your hand a little bit sooner. Do we have anyone from one of the departments that might be able to speak to that concern here today?
Hi, Madam Chair. Kristi Grom.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Groms, if you could go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed.
Sure. Madam Chair, Kristi Grom with the Department of Human Services. Thank you for the question, Representative Liebling. The governor's budget includes our a workforce package that ICFDD workers would be eligible to potentially get, you know, bonus payments or support for childcare, transportation, education. But there's not a specific rate increase in the governor's budget this year. We did, the governor and DHS did authorize emergency funding for a variety of providers, including ICFDD. So that's a 5% rate increase that's expected to begin. It's a short-term, three-month rate increase. I think we're expecting that to begin in about April. And we are still anticipating getting the rate increase approved from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that the legislature passed last session. So there was a 5% rate increase to that per diem rate last session that legislators passed. And we are just waiting for the final word from CMS to be able to implement that rate increase.
Thank you, Ms. Grom. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry to prolong the end of the hearing. It was just a little bit longer here, Madam Chair, but I appreciate that, Ms. Grom, because I I was pretty sure that we hadn't just ignored them. And so I'm not sure how this bill will interact with all that is coming and has come and so on. But I'm certainly sympathetic to the work that these folks are trying to do and the needs that they have. But we'll have to see, I think, how all these pieces fit together. And anyway, thank you, Representative Backer, for bringing the bill. Thank you, Ms. Graham.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Graham, for your explanation. And thank you, Chair Liebling, for the question. Representative Backer, again, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I know that we certainly want to continue to have these conversations. I know there's folks like Ms. Carrolls who are doing incredible work across the state. And so we do acknowledge that and want to make sure that we are being thoughtful about how we address some of these issues. With that, members, I will lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance and Policy Omnibus. And if there are no other questions or concerns for today, we will go ahead and adjourn.
Madam Chair, is it possible for me to add one just comment?
We normally wouldn't, but I do appreciate that. And so, Ms. Carrolls, yes, we will go ahead and give you a moment.
Oh, okay. And I appreciate if we take into consideration the 5% increase that is proposed, that still would make our base rate of $149 per person a year. And currently our break even is $175. So what proposing this, it's basically trying to get Monarch Heights up to a level playing field. So that way with additional rate increases that are statewide, we would be able to kind of be able to stay in the field. So that's kind of what this is asking for. So I apologize. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you. We are 3 minutes away from the end of our time here today. Does anyone have any other final comments before we adjourn? Seeing none. Thank you, members. Thank you, testifiers. With that, we will go ahead and adjourn for today.